This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Kia ora and welcome to the Joy Jam. You are listening to Marie Gibson. I'm the host of this podcast, and I think we're at 183. I've been doing a series on addiction because, as you all know, I collected them like fucking Girl Scout cookies, badges. What I haven't been addicted to is probably more apt in this show. But anyway, that gets a bit boring after a while because there's only so many glory stories of old that we can learn from with my story. So I've recruited along some really courageous people who are going to share their story over the next 3 weeks. And in the studio, I've got Gina. Hi, Gina.
Hi.
I'm going to put it out there. She was just telling me that she's really nervous, but we're a safe space here. And I'm also a gossip because I've just let you all know. So there we go. Anyway, I met you, can I say this?
Yeah.
Where we met, I met Gina only the once on Thursday night addiction group that my friend volunteers for, and she knows my story of, you know, being addicted to all the things, and she thought it could be a really cool place for me. So I came along one night, and I'm just too useless to get there every Thursday, but it was an amazing place, and that was where I met you.
Yeah.
So I don't know your story though. So, what was your poison?
My poison was meth.
My old meth. Yep. Okay. Yep. I'm familiar. I've done around a jaunt around the block or two with that. When did your story start?
So my story first started. I was 19 when I first tried it, and I just loved it. It was like everything that was bad was just numb, but everything else was just so good.
Yep.
Had you
taken nothing before that? Like you just, you were clean one day and then?
No, to me pot doesn't really count. Like,
yep. Yeah, no, I'm all for that.
I'd done my days of smoking pot. I'd tried, like, party pills and party drugs and stuff like that, but never really into anything like that before.
Yeah.
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 So it was like, yeah. And that went on for about 5 years. And one day... Oh, wow.
Well, hang on, before we get to the giving up, before we get to the giving up stage, we tried meth. You experience the euphoria.
Yeah.
All of that. For those of you out there listening who have fought with the meth demon, we all know that euphoric feeling of feeling like you're fucking invincible, eh?
Yeah,
like the whole world.
I honestly felt like I could do anything I wanted and there was just no consequence, like, at all. Like, nothing could happen to me that would be bad. And I could just, yeah, do
like
anything.
Like this Teflon coating, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of numb.
Yeah, like 10-foot bulletproof. Like, I just thought I was, yeah, that.
Yeah. What kind of world did you live in?
Oh, not a very pretty world. So I was a sex worker. I moved around a lot because I wasn't paying rent and things like that back to begin with. So I got clean for 6 years and then went back to it. And that was the same sort of world. I went back to sex work. I worked for the DHB for a few years when my addiction got really bad. So I lost, well, I didn't lose that job, I left.
There's nothing like having a full-time job to get in the way of a healthy drug habit, eh?
I know, right?
You know, what's a girl to do? Clearly you've got to give the job up. And sometimes it's a case of, fine, I'll leave, because, you know, probably it's not going to be too far along the track before you are quietly asked to leave the premises. Yeah. I remember that when I worked for IHC and I had first discovered heroin back then.
Yeah.
And so I was mainline in that, trying to hold down a job, and it wasn't.
You just can't, hey?
Nah, it just wasn't working for me. So in the end, I had to give that up, and I became a sex worker too.
Yeah.
I possibly had one of Palmerston North's first dungeons.
Oh, wow.
Like, was the dominatrix here.
Yeah.
So yeah, got a few glory stories and not so many glory stories around that world of sex work. And and you kind of learn, I know you live in the shadows.
Mm.
You don't live in the normal daylight, do you?
No.
With the straight world.
No. I could never understand the straight people. And I was never really awake at the same time as them, unless I was doing like a, you know, let's stay up for a few days type of thing. But it wasn't, it was very different.
Yeah.
Like, learning now how to, like, be in this world again is, it's pretty fucking weird.
Yep. It's tricky business, and getting used to, I don't know, minimum wage, things like that. What was it, purely to fund drugs that you got into sex work?
Yeah.
Yep.
So what happened was, I was using my wages when I was at the DHB at the time. And then, of course, the more you have it, the more you have to have it, and the more it costs.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up working two jobs for a while, and then I left the DHB and just went to sex work.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Wow. Wow. What was... Did you do work, I guess, full-time? Like, that became your life?
Yeah.
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 And how long did that go on for, did you say? You were 19.
Yeah, so that one went on for 5 years, but then after that I went into mental health and then worked for the DHB, and then that time around went for...
Okay. I missed the memo there. So 19 through to about 24, I guess, 5 years. And then you tried to get clean.
Yeah.
Did you go into rehab or did you just stop?
No,
I just stopped. What happened there?
Yeah, so I just stopped. I think the whole reason that I relapsed again was because I didn't do anything for my recovery. I just stopped. And so it was always right there.
You were just the dry drunk.
Yeah.
I guess that's that term that I'd heard from AA.
Yeah.
You know, the alcoholic who all he's done is given up drinking.
Exactly. Because the second that things went wrong in my life, I was like, right, that's it, here we go. And then it was straight back to it. But this time it was a lot harder to get out of.
Yeah. The second time round.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think that was?
I think I immersed myself in it more. And I was in the area, whereas before, when I was 19, I was living up in Auckland and I came home because I'd had enough. Like, I was at a point where I actually got quite suicidal. And so I came home. And I think that was the big difference.
That was your line in the sand.
Yeah, that was
initially.
Yeah.
And it's nice, I guess. Not nice. Fuck, that's a stupid term. There's something to be said about being able to not run away, but be able to leave, the place
yeah.
that it's all happening. You leave the people that you're associating with,
yeah.
and I guess you can start again.
Yeah.
So then you came home, you got clean for how long?
So I was clean for about 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. What drew you back in?
So I ended up getting engaged to my last partner, and the whole thing was she was so anti-P, it wasn't funny, and, like, fair enough. And so I never touched it. And then when we broke up, I went and sold my engagement ring for a bag as a whole, like, fuck you to her type of thing.
Yeah.
But obviously it came around and bit me on the ass.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Isn't it cool how we just self-sabotage, self-sabotage everyone, like we cut our nose off to spite our face.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I recognise that tale. Oh, I'll show you. I'll fucking show you. Oh, all the way. Oh, no. So you got back into it.
Yeah.
And you just, from that first bag, second time round, you were back there.
It was straight
back
beer.
In.
Yeah.
Straight back in.
Yeah.
Except now you're not in Auckland.
No. So now I'm in the area where I'm living and...
Where you got clean.
Yeah.
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 Wow. Okay. So now you're around your family with your addiction. Is that mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Were they suspicious? Did they know?
My mum says that she wished she had have known, and then other times she says she thinks she knew something but she didn't want to ask. We don't really, like, we didn't really ever talk about it because my mum's sort of one of those, like, she'd rather not know because it's easier.
Yep. Yep.
Which I can get. So what ended up happening was there's this lady called Trish, and she's, like, my second mum. And I told her, and she told me pretty much to move in with her. She'd help me get clean. Like, things weren't good at home anyway. And I went there and thought, you know, I'll just carry on doing what I'm doing and everything will be fine. But she sat down with me one day, and she said, I can't handle your addiction, so you can either get help or you're going to have to find somewhere else to go. And she was the one person I had left at the time.
Wow. Did you listen? So or
I got help. I relapsed a couple of times, but she was always there for me. Yep. And I just kept trying to get clean after I'd relapsed. So.
Yeah. And how long ago was that?
I've been clean 6 months and 5 days.
6 months and 5 days. Fuck, yep. Every day counts, eh? Yeah. What are you doing differently this time, I guess, to stay clean?
So this time I go to that group every Thursday.
How does that help? Like, is that?
Oh, I love it.
Is it a magic pill? Is it
no,
like
it's
what,
not,
what?
It's not a magic pill, but it's. I walk in that room and I just feel so much love and support, and like there's so many friends that I've made through there who, like, if I'm having a really bad day and craving, I can text them and be like, "Hey, this is what's going on," and you know, they're there,
yep.
And they actually, like, they get it on a different level.
Yep.
Which is really cool. I'm also doing counselling because there's a lot of trauma that led to the whole addiction in the first place that I didn't deal with the first time around. What else am I doing?
So when you're doing counselling, like, how, when you're revisiting, I guess, trauma.
Yeah.
How does that not want to make you want to use?
The way it's quite cool the way she does it, because I thought the same thing. I was like, fuck, I'm not going to go and talk to somebody. But like, we talk about stuff and then she'll bring it back around so that it doesn't, like, I always leave there feeling good. I don't leave there feeling like, fuck, I wish I never came here and like, you know, I feel so shit and I want to get high. Yeah. Like, I always leave there feeling really good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. How long have you been in counselling for now?
Maybe a couple of months.
Yeah. And you think it's making a difference already?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Do you get funding for stuff like this?
So it's funded through WINS.
Yep. Cool. When you work for the DHB, I mean, it's so at odds with that world, the world of, you know, sex, drugs and rock and roll.
Yeah.
Do you want a job like that again?
Oh, God.
It's okay to say no.
Not anymore because it's so stressful, but at the same time our team was just really close. Like, it was like another family. It was really nice. And I do miss some of the clients, but no, it's just too stressful.
So what kind of job, what kind of future do you want to shape?
So I'm looking at studying psychology and counselling next year. Yeah. And I want to eventually specialise in AOD.
Ah.
Yeah. So, like, spend this year sorting out my own shit and then next year studying and, yeah, hopefully help people.
Yep. And with that, I guess there's that recommitment every day to stay clean.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. What's your biggest regret?
I lost my best friend.
That's ruthless.
That was hard. She didn't die.
Yeah.
But we'd been best friends since high school. I'm the godmother of her two kids, but we don't talk anymore. And I can't even tell you why, because I was too high and I honestly don't remember.
Oh.
I've yelled at Trish before when I've been withdrawing, like just shit like that. And it's like just hurting people, fucking things up. Like, I fucked up a 10-year career, like, you know, it was just...
And we don't do that easily. And it doesn't happen overnight either.
No. Like, I was leaving work to go and, like, get lunch, but I was, like, driving off down the road and snorting crack on my way. Like, it was just, it was ridiculous.
Just to get through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah. I always say that I don't have any regrets because, I don't know, my world of sex, drugs and rock and roll, I don't think I have regrets there, but what I do regret was that I never fucking believed in myself.
Yeah.
And had I done that one little thing back then, how that may have changed the whole course of everything for me. Did you have good self-esteem going into this?
No.
Okay, so before, you know, the 19-year-old that picked up that meth pipe, who were you as far as your confidence, your self-esteem?
I didn't really have it, to be honest with you. After my grandparents passed away, so I had the three most amazing grandparents. And after they passed away, it was just, like, everything turned to shit. And, like, I didn't matter anymore because I'd always mattered so much to them.
Yeah.
But it didn't really feel like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So when they left, it was sort of just like, oh, well,
your self-worth was tied up in and watching that love that they had for you.
And once I was given that pipe, I did feel that love again. Like it was almost like something was over me, like this massive blanket or something, and like it was just so nice and everything was like really beautiful.
Yeah. I know my nephew, he's a meth addict, and when he used to come round to my place, my mum's ashes, and he was Nan and granddad's boy.
Yeah.
And he used to talk to her, and every time he was hiding from someone or on the run from someone, he always described it that he just felt like they put this like invisibility cloak over him or something, this cloak of numb, and he felt his grandparents with him all the time.
Yeah.
The time that he didn't was when he wasn't on the pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess, how being clean this time, how is your self-esteem and your confidence going to make sure that you believe in yourself enough to stay straight this time?
So, the lady that I told you about, when I went and stayed with her, I stayed with her for about 8 months, and almost every day she reassured me that I was enough and that I was worth it, and she just kept saying it all the fucking time, and it was like I kept thinking, oh, shut up, you know, blah, 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 but no, it worked. Like, yeah, I do believe that I deserve better, and I actually want better. Like, I never really cared before, but now I actually want better for my life.
Yeah. What do you want for your life?
I want to be an ARD counsellor. I want to have a baby. I want to probably have, like, maybe 3 or 4 more dogs. I don't know, just stuff like that, like just simple stuff, like family and,
So animals help in your recovery?
Definitely.
Yeah?
Every day.
Yep. Tell me about that.
Okay, so we've got 3 dogs.
Mm-hmm.
One I've had since she was 3 or 4 months. Her name's Ella, and she is 13 in June. She's super sassy. And if I'm doing something she doesn't like, she'll let me know. Like, she really puts on a show. Like, if I'm getting high or withdrawing or anything, like, it's a really big deal. So I try not to do that around her. Then we've got Ruby, who's just, she's so cute. She's 2 years old. She just bounces everywhere. She's just so happy.
And what kind of dog is she?
So she's a Shih Tzu cross Maltese. Yeah.
Wow, cute.
Yeah. And then we've got another terrier. We're not sure what kind of dog she is, but she's a terrier. And she's, 7 or 9 or something? We're not sure, and she's cool. She's just so happy all the time. Like, if you sit next to her, you have to rub her belly. Or, like, if it's breakfast time, she runs around, her little bum's wagging away. Like, just, yeah, it's just real cute. Like, just simple stuff like that.
So you're like the dog rescuer?
Yeah.
Are we going to see you like this good life place that you're going to end up with squirrels and chickens and goat around the corner?
I don't know about that. Maybe a goat.
Animals they just don't judge.
Yeah.
And they don't judge.
Yeah.
And they don't tell us when we're being a dick, which maybe they should be able to tell us. It sounds like you're one. Almost
yeah,
tells
Ella
you
does.
Like when you're being a dick. what about love throughout all of this? What about at 19?
Didn't really have it.
Yeah.
So when I left Auckland, when I was in my 20s, I got with this guy who was abusive, and that went on for a while. And then once that ended, and I just completely stayed away from the drugs once I met my next partner. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about...
Yeah.
And then you launch back into sex world with a partner?
No.
Yeah.
So I was... can I say this? Yeah. So I was doing sex work when I met Janelle, and then when we moved in together, I stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so Janelle's your partner now?
Yeah.
Who is in the studio, like, I don't know, we're pretending that she's not, but every now and again Gina's, like, looking over, clutching on with dear life with her hand. So how long have you guys been together?
So we've been together just over 4 months.
Yeah. I don't know why, but I just assume when you said, can I bring my partner, that it was a guy. And, I mean, I'm married to a woman. Like, why would I just make that assumption? But I did. I was like, oh, it won't be as cool with a guy energy in here. But I was like, all right. And I don't mean that as in like a guy energy telling their story, but, you know, just the dynamic, you know, girls want to make guys happy, and then you're looking over and seeing if it's okay, and oh, blah, blah, yawn, yawn. Anyway, did you know you were queer? Did you, like, what are you? Or did you just, I use the word queer. Oh, because I'm queer. I don't know. I thought it was, like, a bad word to say. And then, like, my wife, who's been gay, like, her whole life, and she looks like one of the top twins. Like, you just look at my wife and you're like, yeah, gay. So gay. So gay. And she always uses that word queer, and I'm like, oh, sometimes I tiptoe and dance around with the word, but how do you identify them? What's your word?
So I do identify as a lesbian. I have dated guys in the past, but I wouldn't, and I'm not attracted to males, so that to me is the whole meaning of the word.
I see the word lesbian, I don't think that fits me, you know, like I am attracted to men. Yeah. I just got really bad fucking taste in men, you know, like they are dicks.
Yeah.
So, and I met Chris and fell in love, so, you know, the rest is history. But for this year, what steps until you get into studying, what's your day-to-day look like?
So at the moment, I'm waiting to start a grief program. So that'll be for the year. I don't really know much about it, but it's just helping me deal with things that I haven't dealt with before. Then just...
Is that out at Massey?
I don't even know where it is, to be honest.
I don't know.
I
did some grief counselling out at Massey because my parents died of cancer, and I got it, and that was it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was really helpful.
Yeah.
So basically, I mean, you're only 6 months clean, like that's when I think about what life looked like, you know, I'm 6 years now.
Oh, wow.
Clean. Yeah, I know. It feels like so long. And it was just, I guess, every chunk of 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, and another 6 months would go by and another 6 months would go by. And I'd like to think that I'll never take it again. I won't ever say that I won't, because then I'm just setting myself up for failure. But I'd like to think that I'll never touch it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it?
See, I can't say that I'll never touch it again, but I can say that today I'm not going to. That's how I get through my days. Yeah.
Yep. Today I choose not to.
Even if it's like a really bad day, and then I'll think, okay, maybe tomorrow you can have it, and then obviously I'm not going to have it. But like tomorrow, just think, oh, actually I don't feel like it anymore, or, you know, the next day or whatever.
Is that one of the biggest strategies you've used, like on the daily?
Yeah.
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 Yep. Anything else for anyone else out there that just really wants to start day one?
I don't know if I should say this, but I'm prescribed weed that helps.
Fuck yes, it does. Fuck yes, it does. No one's taken that from me.
Talking. I don't even know what helps. I like just trying to get through, really.
Yep.
Doing whatever you can. Like I do a lot of diamond art, which like really just settles my mind a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I find having something to calm the mind.
Yeah.
Calm the mind and just focus on. Because every time, I'm giving up vaping at the moment. And when that craving of wave, and I'm just reminding myself that it's actually okay, that nothing's going to happen to me if I'm riding this wave and it just feels awful and it's going to go down soon.
Yeah.
It's like fucking menopause. In about 90 seconds, I've got to stop hot flushing. But maybe it feels 20 times worse than that. Oh, thank you so much for coming on, Gina, and sharing us your story. I know it's hard. I hope that every day is a good day from here on out, or even on rough days, every day is still going to be a clean day for you.
Thank you.
Cool. Okay, and for the rest of you out there, if you need to get help, get some help, eh? Life in recovery is fucking cool. Okay, ka kite.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.